Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you once again, and today's podcast, I guess it's not officially, but kind of feels like it should be sponsored by Arby's, Phil.
We won a game this week. We won one.
Yes, Marquette won the bye game against Jackson State, so it wasn't a total loss, but obviously still licking our wounds after what happened on Saturday. We will unfortunately talk about it as best we can, but then we'll try to turn the page and look forward to a big week for your Golden Eagles as they play Kansas State and UCLA, their last two non-conference games of the season. And we'll talk, will Marquette win a game in December? We touched on that a little bit last week. This week may give us an indication if that's going to happen or not. So
yeah.
Phil, you know, as I said, I don't know if I said it on the pod last week, but I think I definitely have said it in chats and everything. Like, I wasn't able to watch the game in my house and, like, listen to the audio because my niece had a birthday party on Saturday, so I kind of scheduled it. Because, you know, I live in Fort Worth and they live in Dallas, so that's about, you know, 45 minutes to an hour drive. So with a 11:30 tip and a 2 o'clock party, I knew I couldn't make it. So I drove out to where the party was going to be. My niece was turning 4, by the way, and it was a princess-themed birthday party. Really
happy
excited.
Birthday, Avery.
Yes, she is.
Friend of the pod. Avid listener.
Friend of the pod. She is a handful, but she is sweet. But anyway, wasn't going to miss her birthday party, so wasn't going to be late either. I found a bar literally right next to where the birthday party was going to be, so I camped out, and then I realized, dang, it's college football championship Saturday. But fortunately, they were cool, and the place was relatively empty, so they just turned on a TV at the bar for me. And I watched this game. And I was enjoying myself in the first half, Phil. It was a good first half. I mean, things were kind of trending in the right direction, but man, things really fell apart there in the second.
Yeah, the second half really kind of unwound everything in the first half. In fact, I even tweeted at halftime, like, hey, were there things that would change about the first half? Absolutely. But nothing that happened in the first half truly made me mad, upset, angry, disappointed. I was entirely comfortable with how the first half went, especially against a talented team on the road. Then the second half happened, and, well, there was a lot to be mad, upset, angry, frustrated about. And, it sucks to lose to a rival in the in a game where basically the other team wins going away. Now, like, you know, if you look at it from a quarter standpoint, where Marquette really just let this go is the first 10 minutes of the second half, right? That's where the majority of the score differential came from. And boy, like, it just seemed to go all bad at once. The defense stopped. You know, Wisconsin was getting fast breaks off of inbound passes. You know, Marquette's offense just couldn't click. And boy, Johnny Davis is talented and Brad Davidson is annoying AF. And thank God we never have to deal with him again.
At least we don't think so.
I
don't know if he's
going
to apply for a seventh year, but that was obvious. I mean, that's the simplest analysis of the game for me is that, yeah, Johnny Davis was awesome. And Marquette just does not have a scorer who can match what he brought to that game. And hopefully maybe that's the last time they see him. And maybe he'll be off to the NBA after this year and they won't have to deal with him again. But he
one
was tough.
One can only hope.
He was tough. And when you just – Marquette does not have an elite, consistent scorer. You know, well, I mean, just, I don't know, you'd ask for an elite scorer. Like, it's not like we need Marcus Howard here, but, like, just a go-to guy. Like,
right.
The guy that you know is going to go out there and get you 20 points every night. Marquette just does not have that guy.
Yeah, Marquette's got guys that could get 20 points in any given game, but I think the key point
right.
you're making is the consistency.
Right, yeah, there's not a go-to scorer. A guy, game on the line, you need a bucket, you give it to him. And you could draw up a play for him, and you know he's going to get to a bucket. And a guy who the other team has to scheme for. There are some nights where Morcell can get to 20, or some nights when Lewis can get to 20. Cam Jones is probably a guy who can have some 20-point nights, but none of them were there on Saturday, and Johnny Davis was. And Wisconsin knows when they need a bucket, they can get it to Johnny Davis, and they did over and over again on Saturday, and then they got a nice supplemental performance from Davison. You know, he hit outside shots that were, quite frankly, a lot of them were wide open. And, you know, that's, I think, where Marquette's defense let them down a little bit. And Wisconsin did a pretty good job, a really good job, actually, of getting past the press and passing right through it. And Marquette was not able to get that half-court defense set and find their man and get stops. And Wisconsin got open looks and just kept, they hit above their season average on threes. And Marquette, I mean, just didn't make enough shots.
Yeah, I agree. And it was, you know, Marquette was like, was just struggling to play either end with any kind of energy. So I especially in the second half, and I think, you know, Shockey even alluded to it in his post-game interview with Homer, was that, you know, Johnny Davis was no doubt the best player on the court on Saturday, and it showed, and Wisconsin was just feeding him the ball. But it wasn't like Johnny Davis was doing anything crazy unique or was passing out and like generating offense for others. You know, Shaka was like, yeah, when he got the ball, he was going to the hoop and he was going to try and score. And for whatever reason, the defense simply could not adjust and take that away from them. I mean, they played some strong defense at times. I remember there was one half court defense where Lewis was on him for, you know, 29 seconds of the shot clock, and Johnny Davis took a fall away kind of, you know, jumper at from the free throw line with Lewis's hand in his face, and he made it. It was one of those. You know, yeah, if you're going to make that shot, then, well, you know, more power to you. No one can stop that shot if it's going in. And so they were just, Wisconsin, like it or not, was the better team on Saturday. And you have to hope that this is more of a blip than anything for the team, because the defense, which was a cornerstone of, you know, the Illinois victory, the comeback against West Virginia, etc., the defense just was not there in the second half. There was not the energy. And this is not a team, to your point about the go-to scorer, this is not a team that has offense that can turn on a dime and generate points. The defense has to show up, and they simply did not in that second half.
Yeah, defense let them down. When the defense isn't there, this team cannot rely on the offense to bail them out. That was something that teams in – we've gotten used to over the past few years, that the offense would bail the defense out sometimes and you would get wins or you would just outscore the other team. This team is not going to just be able to outshoot opponents. They need stops, and they need when you can make buckets and you can set up your defense, and then that defense can hopefully lead to more offense and hopefully easy buckets, and they didn't get enough. I will say, a bright spot was Oso. Oso got a lot of minutes in that game. Played very well when Kerkwath was out with foul trouble for a lot of that game, actually. Kerr only ended up getting 10 minutes because of the fouls situation. But I continue to love what we're seeing from Oso Iguodaro. He's going to be a guy that, I mean, he's got 3 more years of college basketball if he wants it after this. And we talked about goals at the beginning of the season, Phil, and one of them that I kind of laid out was figuring out which of these young guys are going to be key pieces as Shaka continues to build. Because when you've got 10 freshmen, 10 freshmen and sophomores, realistically in today's college basketball world, you know they're probably not all going to be with you till the end of their eligibility. You're probably going to lose guys to transfers, or some guys just may not be what you thought they were. But the hope was to identify a few guys that are on the young side that are going to be key pieces going forward. And Oso's looking like one of those guys that is going to be very important as Shaka builds this program. And I really like his progression just within this season. I'm really excited to see what he could develop over the next two.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, hey, I mean, Kerkwath is a solid player. He does enough on the offensive end and is very solid on the defensive end. But, you know, to your point about Oso coming on, like, I'm almost to the point where I want to see him play, like, 30 minutes a game if we can, right? Like, just his combination of offensive touch around the basket, his ability to pass and handle the ball as a five is pretty remarkable, for especially for someone so young. And then more importantly, his defense. He's not the put the fear of death into you shot blocker that Kirk Quoth is, but he was extremely solid on the defensive end, especially in that first half against Wisconsin. Like, there were a couple of plays where he defended two or three folks in the post who were face up on him. He never left his feet until he needed to leave his feet. He played straight up and down, played without fouling. Like, for someone that got, like, what, 9 minutes pretty much last season, for him to come onto the court and have this kind of an impact immediately is pretty impressive. And I know that Quoth was in a lot of foul trouble against Wisconsin, but it's I think it's positive that Oso's minutes are going up. He got 27 minutes in that Wisconsin game, and I think this team will do well when Oso is playing, you know, lots of minutes.
Yeah, and like, to your point you were making about Kerr, it's not like Kerr's playing poorly. I mean, Kerr's giving you pretty much everything you want out of him. He's a great shot blocker. I don't think anyone ever expected Kerr to be a great offensive player, but his offensive rating is actually pretty decent for what you would expect out of a guy like him. He's not a guy who's going to be like a go-to scorer, but Kerr is giving you most of everything you would hope for. But Oso is kind of showing you a little more all-around game, much more than we saw last year. Like you said, he barely played. I mean, he is a guy who, granted, the COVID thing kind of confuses me with eligibility and things like that, and I get lost track of who's what, but he's a guy who, if COVID wasn't a thing last year, probably still could be redshirted, and because he played so little last year, it still would be a redshirt freshman this year. But he is officially classified as a redshirt freshman, so he has technically 3 years after this. But yeah, like I do want to see more minutes out of Oso, and I hate that it would be at the expense of Kerr, because Kerr is playing well, and as we touched on last week, they're just not guys that you would ever play together.
Yeah, you can't.
I can't see that.
No.
I just can't see that working out, because, you know, one of them would have to guard further away from the basket, and I don't know how that would even look on offense. So they're just two guys who one has to sub in for the other all the time. And, you know, maybe it ends up being some games where it is 20-20, right? Like, it is half and half for the two of them. Maybe that's an ideal scenario for Shaka, but I guess it's maybe a good problem for Shaka to have, to know that he's got two guys that he really likes who bring something different to the table, and whoever's in there is probably going to do fine and give him what he expects out of them. Because, again, neither one of those guys are expected to be the number one offensive option, just expected to hold their own in the paint defensively. Kerr probably does that a little better and maybe show a little bit of versatility on the offensive end, and probably Oso does that a little better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be one of those where it's whoever's getting the most minutes is going to come down to either foul trouble or just straight up matchups, right? Like, if we're going to need a rim protector, Quoth is going to get more time than Oso. If we're going to need a little more smooth and reliable offense, I think Oso gets more minutes, right? Like, as an example, I'm going to expect Oso to actually get 20, 25 minutes against Kansas State, right? I just think from a matchup standpoint, Oso's going to get some run there that maybe Quoth doesn't. Because I also think the press is a little better with Oso in than Quoth, right? I think Kerr gets a little out of place from time to time, and we don't really see that with Oso as much. So it's going to be fascinating to see how Shaka balances those minutes, because, you know, as you said, both players deserve to play, but they can't play together. So how, you know, someone's going to come up short on the minute side, because there's only 40 minutes to go around at the five.
Right. It just might be a hot hand situation or a matchup situation.
Right.
Maybe if you got a situation where a team's getting a layup line and you need more help defensively, maybe Kerr makes more sense. But maybe if you're playing a team that's maybe a little weaker in the middle and you think you can get more buckets offensively in the middle, or maybe the outside shots aren't falling and you desperately need to go to the middle, maybe you need a little bit more Oso. So, we'll see what how they do in that regard. Any takes on anyone else in, as far as like backcourt perimeter players in this game, Phil, that whether it's positive or negative as we look forward to the next couple games?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, from a positive standpoint, let's go with the Brian from Family Guy compliment sandwich.
We're going to start with something good.
Something good.
We're going to go with something we need to work on. Yes. And then end with something good.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say David Joplin, I think, has been coming along, you know, and I've been saying it in chats and on Twitter and just into the world in general, that between Joplin and Oso, like, those guys have just, like, impressed me. And they're still going to have young player moments. But David Joplin, I think, is starting to figure it out on the defensive end. And on the offensive end, I think he's slowly becoming one of the more reliable shooters on this team, right? He may not...
35%?
Yeah. And he may not be, like, guaranteed offense, but he plays within himself. He's adequate on the defensive end. I'd like to see him starting to get, you know, more minutes. And Joplin is somebody you can play along Oso or Quoth, right? Joplin can play probably the three or the four. So he gives you some roster flexibility. So he's certainly impressed me here over the last couple of games as he's starting to, I think, maybe put it together mentally.
I think the minutes are there to be had for him, too,
yeah.
As opposed to maybe some of the younger guys, maybe like as opposed to a guy like Ellis, who maybe has played okay in spots, but I just don't think there are minutes available for him. But a guy like Joplin at his position, there are minutes available for him at the 3-4 as Shaka tries to figure out what the best starting lineup is or the best rotation minutes would be at, say, at the 3 and the 4. And as you said, he's really, I mean, statistically, he is the second best 3-point shooter on this team. Of guys who have taken at least 5 threes, I say that because Ellis is 2 of 4, but he's second on the team in 3-point percentage, but he's at 35.5% on this season, only behind Morsell, who is at 44%, who is kind of buoyed by that scorching start he had, but he's still shooting well for the most part from three at 44% on the year. So, I mean, from a 6'7" guy shooting 35% from three, you'll always take that.
Absolutely.
So it's a good number. It's promising. And hopefully that continues. But yeah, I agree. He needs to continue to show that he can hold his own defensively and rebounding. Cause you know, that's something that was a concern with, as we talked about, losing some minutes from Omax to try to figure out maybe a spark for this team. A bad rebounding team getting smaller. But if Joplin can show what he can do rebounding the ball and provide a boost in that area, I think there are minutes for him to be had there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think, you know, and you hit on it, right, that we're seeing – and this is a nice thing, right? This is going to be both a compliment to Shaka and a dig, I suppose, at Wojo. But, you know, we are seeing lineup changes and personnel usage rates change, and they seem to line up or make sense with kind of like the data that's out there, right? Omax, you know, as we talked about in the last podcast, is probably, you know, especially offensively and to a certain extent defensively, the data seems to indicate, you know, hey, we probably should not play him as many minutes as we are. And then in near real time, we're seeing Marquette adjust and Omax got shorter runs in the last couple of games. And somebody like David Joplin is getting more runs. So the staff is adjusting to what they're seeing versus, hey, let's keep doing the same thing until something changes. So that's positive, right? The results may not be the final result may not be what we want, but I think it's heartening to see a staff that is making changes and putting different personnel out there that are probably more reflective of winning potential. I think that's positive.
Yeah, it's okay to admit something you're doing is not working and try something new. It's totally fine.
Right. I do it all the time, right? And I think it's a recurring theme on this podcast is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And that was almost the inverse motto of the previous regime. So that's why I say it's such a good thing to see Shaka reacting to information that clearly he has, but then us in the general public also have, and kind of go, maybe we should do X. And then to see him do X later, it's kind of like, okay, here's somebody who gets it.
Well, at least we tried, and even if it doesn't work, you can't say you didn't try it.
Right.
Say,
right.
Well, hey, look, we tried this new thing, and it was even worse, so right. We're not going to do that anymore.
Right, right. And I would say the one thing that's disappointing, or I would point to from a disappointed standpoint, is I guess I don't want to call out any one player particularly, but I'll just say the guard play. Whether it's non-reliable three-point shooting or too many turnovers or just looking lost on offense, I think the guards are, and maybe they've hit a skid, right? Maybe they're you know, just in a bit of a funk, but I really think the guard play is letting Marquette down right now.
Maybe a little bit, yeah. Like I said, necessarily putting that on one guy, and I think that's fair because everybody has a hand in what's been going on recently. But, you know, when Daryl Morsell has been great, the team has been great.
Yep.
When he's been a little quieter, they do struggle a little bit. And I look at Tyler Kolek's three-point percentage, and I just keep waiting for that number to go up because it has to. He is a better shooter than what the statistics show. I mean, he's 25.6% from three on the year. He is better than that. And the stroke looks good. It's not like he's out there with one of those awkward three-point shots like you know, Lonzo Ball or even Vander Blue had, where you look at it like, ugh, like that's not going to work. I mean, he's got a good looking 3-point stroke, and you would think it'd be good. What did he shoot last year at George Mason? 35%, I want to say,
something like that. Something
35.9% from three last year at George Mason. So, and he's getting a lot of open looks too. It's not like he's forcing shots against, you know, guarded threes. He's getting good looks, I think, and they're just not going down. That's a number that I look at that's got to come the other way at some point, because he's too good of a shooter to be having a 25% next to his name by 3-point percentage. I think that's going to turn around. And I think, speaking to the group as a whole, I think we get back to the whole defense thing, right? Particularly in the Wisconsin game, guys did lose their man quite a bit, and there was a lot of open threes in that game, and that's how a team that came in shooting 28% from three can shoot 40% from three on you, is when they have open looks. Division I college players are probably going to knock those down a little more often. And I think, yeah, when the press is ineffective and the opponent is able to pass right through it and get into the front court quicker, Marquette, especially on Saturday, it seemed like they were scrambling to find their man and get set in a half-court defense. And by the time they had it figured out, Wisconsin had 2 points.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's kind of the piece I'm talking about. Right. And even like another example, like Greg Elliott. Right. You know, I know he was suspended early in the season and getting back, but like you've got to get some stability and energy and effort from, you know, at this point, a fifth year senior. Right. And I just defensively and offensively from all sides, I think that the guard play has just been at best inconsistent. Right. I you know, like you said, early in the season, Daryl Morsell has been lights out and has regressed a little bit of late. But that doesn't mean he can't come back to it. But, I don't know what I'm not in the room. I'm not talking to the players. I'm not seeing how they're practicing, etc. But it just feels like the guards are taking their foot off the gas a little bit. And I'll be curious to see what, if any, changes Shaka makes around that in terms of, you know, the mix of players that are playing, how much time they're getting, kind of what approach they take, because you cannot have, if your entire model is predicated on, hey, we're going to play violent defense and turn teams over, and get the ball into the offense's hands in the half court, You just can't have mental lapses and kind of lackadaisical play like we saw a couple of times against Wisconsin. So I'll be curious to see how Shaka coaches them up here over the next couple of days before Kansas State.
Yeah, and the tough thing there is, like, if you're not a great 3-point shooting team, I don't know if there's any amount of coaching up you can do to make you a great 3-point shooting team.
Right.
Like, if you don't have great 3-point shooters, I mean, what can you do? Like, it's not like you can say, "Hey, guys, make more threes." Oh, okay. Well, that's a great idea. We'll make more threes. No,
like, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, like, they're either good 3-point shooters or they're not, and I'm just not sure that Marquette really has a great 3-point shooter. I mean, Morcell's numbers are good early on, but I don't know if it's going to be at 44% all year.
I will say they, you know, to your point about, like, you're not going to coach them to make threes better. Like, I don't feel that they're taking bad threes or they're taking threes outside of the offense. So, you know, they may just be a bad 3-point shooting team. This just, you know, I mean, Tyler Kolek should be better, and maybe he, you know, will have a tremendous regression back to the mean. But they should be better than they are because they are taking good threes. They're just not going in.
Right. 32.9% as a team on the year. That ranks 187th in. So that's basically, I guess, smack dab in the middle, right in the middle of college basketball in general when you got 350-something teams now. So maybe just slightly below average as it relates to the rest of the nation. So not great.
No.
Not embarrassingly bad either, I'll say that, though. But
it's manageable, but again, for the quality of the threes they're taking, you'd like to see more of them go in, but and maybe they will. Who knows?
Yeah, you'd like a little more. Do you have one more a layer to the compliment sandwich, or should we move on to the opponents this week?
No, I don't think I have another layer. Do you have another layer? Is there anyone else you want to compliment?
I really don't. Yeah, no. I like, we touched on Oso. He was one of the biggest bright spots. I think Oso and Joplin were the two bright spots.
Yes, for sure.
In the loss, and we'll hopefully see more from others and have more good things to say this week. But might be asking a lot, Phil. We got Kansas State on Wednesday and then UCLA on Saturday. We talked about it last week that this is, you know, winter is here.
Yeah.
Last week, winter is coming. Winter is here. And this is going to be a tough week, a tough month for Marquette because they're going to be underdogs in every game. KenPom has them projected to lose every game this month. Kansas State is no different. So again, that game is Wednesday night, 8:00 Central. The game is on ESPN2, actually, part of the Big East Big 12 battle. And the game is in Manhattan, Kansas, in the Octagon of Doom. So Phil, like, KenPom wise, numbers are pretty close between Kansas State and Marquette. I guess maybe Kansas State maybe jumped up a little since I last looked. They're at 62 right now. Marquette is 77. So KenPom has this as a 4-point spread in Kansas State's favor. Looking at some of Kansas State's numbers, some of the things that jump out for me, Phil, is their defense is really good. Especially their effective field goal percentage defense, 10th in the country, holding opponents to 41.7% effective field goal percentage. Again, that is 10th best in the nation. Their defense overall is in the top 50. It's 48th in the nation. Offense, good but not outstanding. That's 106th in the nation. That's just slightly behind Marquette, which is 92nd in the nation. So expect a defensive battle from the Wildcats in Manhattan on Wednesday. What are your takes on this matchup with a Bruce Weber squad?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a rock fight for sure. What's going to be interesting, and, you know, Kansas State has a quote-unquote great 3-point defense. You know, they're only allowing 23.5%. Now, a lot of folks would argue, you know, that 3-point defense isn't really a thing. Yes, you can guard threes, but, you know, threes not going in tend to be more about luck than like legitimate defense. So it'll be interesting to see if that holds true, right? We just talked about Marquette's not great at shooting threes, and Kansas State is really good at preventing threes, it seems, preventing them from going in. But, you know, anything could change there. So I think it'll be a rock fight. I think it'll be low scoring. I think it's going to be a little bit plodding. I don't think there's going to be a lot of pace to this. I mean, obviously Marquette looks to play fast, but I, you know, Kansas State doesn't turn the ball over that much. They're not dissimilar from Wisconsin in that regard. So I just think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a back and forth game with some real clunkers on the rim is my guess. What do you think?
I want to touch on what you said about three-point percentage defense having a lot of luck involved. Is that accurate? Because, I mean, I could see where you're coming from, but I would also think if you're a team that has guards who move well in the perimeter and most of the threes are guarded threes as opposed to unguarded threes, and if you're forcing bad shots from three, maybe that could play a percentage. Now, maybe it doesn't play so much that the number is 23.5%, which is what Kansas State's defensive three-point percentage is right now. Maybe that is some luck of maybe just playing a bunch of bad three-point shooting teams. But I would say there is some skill and planning that would go into being a good three-point percentage defensive team.
There is skill there, right? There is some element to it. But I think it shows up more in the how many threes do you allow to be taken versus, you know, percentage of threes that go in. Yes, there's guarded versus unguarded, and obviously unguarded or guarded threes, you know, are less likely to go in. So if you end up with more guarded threes, you're influencing the three-point percentage. But generally speaking, even in unguarded, right, like if you were to look at Marquette's unguarded three-point percentage, it's pretty low. So at some point, I guess the distinction is that three-point shooting has more influence in the result from the shooter versus two-point percentage, which is, you know, is more so about the types of two-point shots that the defense is allowing, right? If you're getting a lot of shots at the rim, there's a high correlation to two-point shots, the two-point percent being higher, right, than if you're somehow with your defense forcing them to take more jump shots, or, you know, what Nevada Smith would call his kryptonite, then your two-point percentage is going to be lower because those are just lower opportunity points or shots, sure. Excuse me. So, again, I think it's a little nuanced. I don't know. We'll see. But I don't think that Kansas State is some Leviathan when it comes to three-point shooting, but it's not like Marquette's lighting it up either. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
I guess that was just it. I just wanted to cut back to what you said there. But to answer your question about what I think about the game, the number that really jumps out to me is their effective field goal percentage defense, which probably speaks to their defense as a whole, that it's top 10 in the country. So I think the Marquette's shot selection has to be good in this game. I mean, you can't be rushing shots. You can't be forcing things in the lane. Those, what do you call them, tier three, level three shots that are either guarded threes or the long twos, probably not going to be a good idea against Kansas right. State in this game. And just got to find a way to be efficient on offense and try to bring that number down a little bit, because Kansas State looks like they are a pretty good defensive team. Both Kansas State and Marquette have played Illinois. Now, Kansas State lost to Illinois 72-64. So I guess, you know, using the transitive property, Marquette should win this game by about, you know, 9 points.
Oh, done. So, done. Sealed. Well,
but that was on a neutral floor, by the way. But yes, so that is the one common opponent they have. But, you know, other than that, you know, Kansas State wins this year. They don't really have any wins that would measure up to some of Marquette's better wins, because it's Florida A&M, Nebraska, Omaha, North Dakota, Albany, and they squeaked out a win against Wichita State on Sunday. But I guess that is my take on what Marquette needs to like consider against Kansas State is shot selection, because it seems like they're one of the better teams in the country as far as you know, forcing bad shots and or making you take tough shots, making you make tough shots.
Yeah, I agree. And that's where it's worrisome, right? Like Marquette's offense has been inconsistent at best. And I can't put a finger on what it is exactly that has made it so inconsistent, right? It's not like the ball is sticking in any one player's hands and they're dominating the ball and putting up bad shots, right? The offense has just, it seems to have a lot of movement with not a lot of forward action to the hoop. And I think you're not going to, you know, Kansas State wants to play that up, right? They want teams to kind of stagnate, and they're more than happy to, you know, get the ball on a shot clock violation. They're not looking to turn anyone over or do anything crazy. So, I think again, it's going to be an interesting game where, you know, Marquette defensively should do okay against Kansas State. Kansas State's not an especially good offensive team. They protect the ball, and that's really about the only thing they do well on offense. But it's going
to
be
3-point percentage. Yeah, 3-point percentage, about similar to Marquette, pretty close. Effective field goal percentage, pretty similar to Marquette. You know, going back to their defense real quick, something that kind of has occurred to me as I look at Kansas State's wins, their schedule. These are the KenPom rankings of the teams Kansas State has beaten so far. Florida A&M, 289. Nebraska-Omaha, 335. North Dakota, 334. Albany, 312. And then Wichita State, 56. So, three of their five wins are teams 312 or worse. One of them is at 289, and then their best win so far this year is Wichita State. So if you want to look at maybe a reason why Kansas State's defensive numbers might be a little inflated, the competition is something to consider there.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, they might be a little bit of a paper tiger inflated. But again, this is in Manhattan. That's not an easy place to play. Even if Kansas State is an above average defense, that's not good for a Marquette team that's struggling offensively.
Yeah. And in the second road game of the year, by the way, for Marquette. First one obviously did not go well. So this will be the second time they'll be in a bit of a hostile environment. Won't have that rivalry vitriol that the last one had, but still. Like I said, they call it the Octagon of Doom for a reason. Those fans do show up. It's friggin' Manhattan, Kansas, literal middle of nowhere. There's nothing else to do around there. So,
well, and we don't have Marcus Howard to go supernova, right? Like, yeah, we don't have a go-to scorer, right?
Yeah, they are very glad because the last two times Kansas State and Marquette played, Mr. Howard played pretty well. But that was one of his 50-point games, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. The 50-point game was in Milwaukee.
Right. Wouldn't mind having him for this one, but unfortunately we do not. So that game's on ESPN2. I wonder if the announcers will be in the arena for this one. Not to get off on a side rant or anything.
But they need to be. Good God.
It is, I guess, becoming a pet peeve of mine how many broadcast teams are doing things remotely now. I get it. It's cheaper. Saving on costs and whatever. But I watched the game at a bar on Saturday, but I saw people talking about it and reacting to it, and I've noticed it in other games this year, both Marquette games and other games. You notice when the broadcast team is not in the arena. They don't pick up on smaller things like the team's talking to their bench, and you know, it's when you're courtside, you can identify the players much easier because you're close enough to read the name on the back of the jersey,
right?
And you feel the energy from the crowd, and that was the disappointment thing for me, was that the broadcast team was remote on Saturday for a game on Big Fox. All right, like for a Tuesday night bye game against Jackson State, I honestly understand if you're going cheap for a game on FS2. I get it. But, for a game on Big Fox on Saturday, come on, man.
Yeah.
Get the team in the arena. Even if it's your D team, even if you get somebody local, like somebody who lives in Milwaukee, like, you know, Brian Butch was the color guy for one of the last games. I would rather have the D team in the arena than your A or B team doing it remotely.
How much do you think the fact that it was championship Saturday impacted that? I mean, I get it if it's like the talent isn't the same, but I mean, there's no reason they shouldn't be in the arena just because there's football games going on, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, Championship Saturday, yeah, I mean, sure, that's the reason Gus Johnson's not calling the game, which you totally understand. But obviously a team was available to call the game. Like, unless that same team was calling another game later the same day or the next day, and they're trying to save on travel or something. But even then, man, that stinks. I hate it.
Yeah, I agree. And, well, and like, it's putting a bad product out there, right? Because you don't, I mean, even, I feel like they even muted the crowd noise. I mean, I think to try and play down that the team wasn't there, like, I just don't feel like, unless maybe everyone was lulled to sleep by what was apparently a timeshare advertisement in the, at the halftime program in the Kohl. But like the crowd didn't seem crazy.
I hope they didn't hold like the crowd hostage and say you're not leaving until somebody gets out your checkbook.
Right, right. But either way, the point remains. I didn't feel like it was an especially hostile environment, but I don't get a sense of whether the broadcast was downplaying that or if it just wasn't that crazy of an environment. I'd be shocked if it was. I mean, we can say a lot of horrible things about Badgers and Badger fans, but like they show up and they show out. And I didn't get the impression from the broadcast that they did, which makes me think, along with the team not being in the stadium, that they were like, you know, muting that to a certain extent.
Well, yeah, like when you're courtside and those fans are literally right behind you, like so close that they can touch you, like then you feel that energy, right? And
right.
Like that, you know. The person who does that better than any, two people who do that better than anybody are Gus Johnson and Dick Vitale, right? Because, I mean, they feel that energy and they get excited and they bring that enthusiasm, where you like it or not, to the broadcast. And they feed off the fans. And I enjoy that personally. So that's just my little side rant of I enjoy broadcast teams being in the arena that they're calling. It was especially bad this year on baseball. I know how much baseball you watched this year. But, like, when the guys calling the game remotely don't know if the runner is rounding third or where the ball is in the corner. But like, those are the little things that you miss when you have a team broadcasting remotely.
Yeah,
but
absolutely. Again, bring them back in stadium.
That's my side rant on broadcasting. But so Kansas State, Phil, you feeling win, loss? How you feeling about this one? Because like for me, like I'm kind of feeling like it's a loss because it's a road game, but I'm also feeling pressure to like, I really want them to get this game because I'm not sure if they're going to get one in December if they don't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but yeah, I absolutely think this is a must-win game, because if you cannot win this game, there are no easier games in December, right? This feels weird to say it because it is a true road game, but this is the easiest win on the schedule, the easiest opportunity on the schedule in December. I do think this will tell us a lot about the team, right? Like, I'm not going to say they gave up in the second half of the Wisconsin game, but there was definitely something off with the energy and the effort. We'll see how they react to that. Young team, you know, overwhelming environment with a rivalry, despite what anyone says. I think this is going to be a win on Wednesday night. I think it's going to be a rock fight, but I think Marquette can win this.
Yeah. I'm not going to say must win because I haven't shifted expectations to making the tournament yet. So, like must win or else what? Like if they lose, that's kind of what's expected.
Right.
So I'm not saying it's a must win by any stretch because I haven't raised my long-term expectations for this team just yet. But it would be very nice to win if you are in the mindset of trying to make the tournament.
Right.
That seems like it's a bridge down the road that we'll cross if it's something we think is realistic after we get through this month or maybe the next 6 weeks. But so I wouldn't say must win, but it would be very, very nice to win.
Yep.
I'll also say that. But I'm kind of with you that I think this could be a bounce back game for them. And talent wise, I think they're closer to Kansas State they're certainly closer to Kansas State than they are to Wisconsin, or as far as, you know, the metrics. And I think Kansas State's KittenPom numbers may be a little inflated because of the competition they've played. Road game, yes. Challenging, yes. But I do think it's winnable. If they could maybe lick their wounds and shake off the bad feelings from Saturday. But so I do think they can get a win on Wednesday. So, but Saturday,
oh boy,
that may be a different story, my man.
Yeah,
they are taking on the UCLA Bruins, one of the best teams in the country, a team that was picked by many to go to the Final Four and may still be a very popular pick to go to the Final Four. This will be Saturday, 1:30 Central on Fox. So another game on Big Fox. Maybe they'll actually have the team in the arena for this one.
I'm not holding my breath.
Well, there's no Fox doesn't have a college football game on Saturday. So
that's true.
I don't know. Maybe they'll have a team there. But yeah, the Bruins are good, Phil. Bruins have blown out most of the teams they've played this year. One exception being Gonzaga, of course, because they lost that one. And then UCLA was an overtime thriller. They did defeat Villanova in the second game of the season. But other than that, they have smoked a lot of teams this year. Now, granted, some of those teams aren't very good. Cal State Bakersfield, Long Beach State, North Florida, Bellarmine. Those teams are all in the 200s on KenPom. They had a comfortable win over Colorado to open Pac-12 play this past week. But, you know, UCLA is about what people thought going into the season, Phil, that duo of Johnny Juzang and Jaime Jaquez. Just one of the most dynamic duos in the country. Tiger Campbell is an excellent point guard. A guy who was a DePaul commit once upon a time, by the way.
Yep.
Then suddenly he's like, wait, I can do much better than DePaul. And he did. But, yeah, you know, this is a game, Phil. What can you do except brace yourself and hope for the best? I can't put any... I mean, a win would be incredible.
Like, right.
You talk about shaking off some bad vibes and you know, suddenly shifting expectations and talking about making the tournament. An upset like that would do it, but there is... Let's talk realistically here. Marquette, you know, and KenPom, they are a 7-point dog in this game. Wouldn't surprise me if Vegas puts the line even higher than that, and maybe
I would be shocked if Vegas puts the line less than double digits, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, even in a road game, I could see this being a 10-point spread. Once they get, especially if they lose, Marquette loses to Kansas State on Wednesday, that may shift it even further. Maybe if you go to Manhattan and win on Wednesday, maybe it'll be closer to what KenPom is projecting as a 7-point game. But I mean, what do you feel about this UCLA game, Phil? Is it just brace yourself and hope for the best, or do you see a path to victory, or like what would have to happen to pull off what would be a significant upset if Marquette were to somehow figure it out?
Yeah, I think my biggest fear here is that it's actually going to be a UCLA blowout. Like, that's actually what I would predict, and there's a very specific reason for that. It's not just the talent gap, but UCLA is really good at defensive rebounding and getting offensive rebounds, right? And Marquette is not great at offensive rebounds. So Marquette's going to basically have one and done trips down the court. And if they don't shoot well, which they have not been shooting very well of late, that means UCLA is going to be, you know, is going to be going out on a pseudo break, right? Like, Marquette cannot set up its pressure defense effectively unless the other team is taking the ball out from under the basket more often than not. And that is my big fear here, is that will Marquette be able to make enough buckets that UCLA is having to take it out, and they are then going to be facing the pressure and having to deal with the pressure. I just don't think Marquette's going to make enough buckets to apply pressure effectively, and then UCLA is going to be able to score against the half court defense, maybe not at will, but pretty handily, and so I think this one could get out of hand.
Yeah, you're not lying about UCLA's rebounding numbers. Offensive rebounding percentage, 32nd in the country. Defensive rebounding percentage, 9th in the country. Their offense ranks in the top 10. Their defense ranks in the top 25. No matter what number you're going to look at, the advantage is going to be on UCLA's side in this one. But, man, it would be amazing to beat Mick Cronin.
Oh, I would love it. Oh, God. I just want to see, like, 5 minutes. I'm going to record. I'm going to be in attendance, obviously. But I'm going to record the game because I just want to see, like, in the first 5 minutes, maybe Marquette goes out to, like, an 11-8 lead or something like that, and there's some questionable foul call or something to that effect. I just want to see the veins on Mick Cronin's head pop.
Yes. It's just hilarious. I will say respect for Cronin. He is one of the few coaches who has been wearing suits this year. I think I've seen a few games this year where he has rocked the suit. Maybe it was just the Gonzaga game because it was a big game. But, you know, it's nice that some coaches can be casual if they want. I got no problem if you want to be casual, but I respect the suit game.
Agreed.
It's still a great – you know, Jay Wright not wearing suits is really a tragedy in my mind.
Yeah.
The guy – the man's too handsome to not wear suits at college football. College
I mean, him giving up the pinstripe suit is just, it's devastating. But, I mean, not all of those are oversized polo shirts. So,
yeah,
you know?
They're not. Oversized polo shirts can be very comfortable. I can certainly understand that. But I hope Jay steps up the suit game for Big East play or maybe tournament play because college basketball needs dapper Jay. But we're getting off topic. I'm just hoping that UCLA plays like crap, honestly, Phil. I'm hoping maybe a trip from the sunny California shores to what maybe could be a bitter cold night in Wisconsin could be a shock to their system, and maybe they just play like crap. With a 1:30 tip, I guess that's 11:30 their time. Maybe a body clock situation.
I don't know what. What else could we do?
Are we in a world where we can joke about getting the flu, or is this like something people can't talk about now?
But, no, I think we can. I think the flu's fine. Flu's acceptable.
We can joke about the flu. Good. Okay.
Yes. But, the flu's funny again.
Yeah, that's great because other things aren't. But yes, I mean UCLA playing poorly would help so much.
It's the key to victory. In fact.
Yeah. What's your key to victory? The other team playing like crap. That would be my key to victory, and hopefully that happens. But the question is, how can Marquette make UCLA play like crap? Daryl Morsell can only guard so many guys.
Right.
If you want to put him on Johnny Juzang, that's great. I think that sounds like a good idea, but. You gotta stop Jaquez. Lewis may be on Jaquez quite a bit. And then Tiger Campbell's gonna start to create for the other guys. So, there's just too many weapons to stop. Too many guys who are consistent. A huge edge in experience, of course, for UCLA. And it's just hard for me to get optimistic and talk myself into an upset victory against a team as good as the Bruins. So. I'm just going to go ahead and predict that L, Phil. I'm not going to dive too much deeper.
We have spent, 5 minutes on this topic, and there has not been one single thing that has been positive in terms of, Marquette's really got this edge. So if we were to spend the last 5 minutes going, none of this is going to work, and then go, UCLA is going to lose, man, we would be really bad at this free podcast thing.
Yeah, that's basically what we did for our Wisconsin analysis. And, pretty much everything statistically says Wisconsin's going to win this game, but we're going to win, god dang it. And we saw how that went.
Yeah, I've learned my lesson.
No, the thing is, we haven't. I will predict Marquette to beat Wisconsin every year until I'm dead. That I assure you. It doesn't matter if Marquette is a 200 KenPom team and Wisconsin's number one in the country. I will predict Marquette to beat Wisconsin every year. But for something like this that's not a rivalry, I'll go and predict a loss, and it's nothing against the team necessarily. It's just what the numbers say. This should be probably a comfortable win for UCLA, quite frankly. So I'm hoping for a 1-1 week. And
one and one is fine. Again, if you adjusted your priors leading up to this past week, and you were expecting some insane number like, we can go 4-2 in December. That's more about you than what you've actually been seeing on the basketball court. Can this team still win two games in December? Sure, but I'm quite certain one of those is not going to be UCLA.
Right. Hey, I love optimism. Optimism is great. It's great to believe in this team and hope they can prove us wrong in some aspects. But, if they're going to win two games in December, one of them probably needs to be Kansas State, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I think they can do it.
I think they can too. I think they can. Interesting thing on the Take My Money front. For the first two times this year, the result of Take My Money was the same as the result of the game. So we had that inverse thing going for a while.
The curse is over. It's been lifted.
Yeah. So where like Take My Money would hit, but Marquette would lose. Or Marquette would win and Take My Money would fall short. Well, this past week, the Take My Money, which was 32 deflections against Jackson State, did check the box on that one. They got I don't even know what the final number was, but I know it was like 34 late in the game. So they got that number against Jackson State, and the hope was they could get a turnover rate of 15% or better against Wisconsin. Actually kind of came close. It was 14.5, but not enough in both the loss on the game itself and our little silly take my money side bet here. So, Phil, for the games this week, here's what I'm thinking for Kansas State. Kansas State's defense, as I mentioned earlier, holding opponents to an effective field goal percentage of 41.7, which is top 10 in the country. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Marquette's offense for the year, averaging, they are at 51.6% effective field goal percentage. That pretty much has been like above 50% for most of the games they've won. There have been a couple of exceptions. Let me bring up the game tracker here real quick and just go through. So, yeah, they were below 50% in the first three games, including the win over Illinois. But they were above 50% against Mississippi. They were at 63% against West Virginia. Terrible against St. Bonaventure. That probably doesn't surprise you. 35%. Then 57% Northern Illinois. 59%. Almost 60% against Jackson State. And then, actually, they were above 50% against Wisconsin. They were 51%. So what I'm thinking, Phil, is maybe a, considering Kansas State is holding opponents to 41.7, I want Marquette to be closer to its average. I'm going to say an effective field goal percentage of 50% against Kansas State.
I like it.
I think if you could do that, you probably got a good shot to win the game, but you also got to step up defensively too. So, but I think if so, I could totally see that it going that Marquette hits that number, but also loses the game. But I'm gonna, but that would be quite a shift for Kansas State, which has been pretty good defensively as far as the effective field goal percentage. So for the K-State game, I'm doing 50% effective field goal percentage for Marquette's offense.
I dig now, it. I like it.
The UCLA game, like, I don't even want to, like, my tip, like, in a game where they're probably going to be, I mean, they're definitely going to be overmatched, I think something as simple as, like, covering the spread, I don't even know if I want to go that way, because the spread might be, like, could be, like, 10 points, and they could lose by 15, 20, so, what's a realistic number you think we should shoot for in the UCLA game, Phil?
Boy, my first thought was keep it under 20,
But see, that was it. Yeah, I think they can do that.
They could do that. Cool. But I am tempted to look at something around rebounds, because that's got to be a focal point if they're going to do anything, is they got to be able to rebound the ball better than they have. You know, and UCLA does not turn the ball over either.
Right.
Boy.
Let's see. Their offensive rebounding percentage is, Marquette's for the year is 24.4, which is not a very good number. So it's got to be better against UCLA, but how can it possibly be? Because UCLA is so good.
Why don't we say this? Let's say you pick the number, but it's let's say it's hold the UCLA offense effective field goal percentage under a certain number, say 50 or 51, right? Because then that gets at the underlying numbers around turnover percentage and rebounding, et cetera, right? Like, what is a number that makes sense for any shot of victory if Marquette is to hold UCLA under?
So for effective field goal percentage?
Yeah.
So UCLA's effective field goal percentage for the season is 52.8. So want to just make it, I mean, boy, holding in the 50s probably seems optimistic. What is Marquette's defense for the year? Holding opponents 47.8. So why not just, well, what the hell? I mean, they're probably going to lose the game. So let's just go an even 50. How about that?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, honestly, they can do it. Like, UCLA is shooting lights out from three. They're shooting almost 40% as a team from the behind the arc. So if Marquette can play any kind of three-point defense, I know this flies in face of the previous statement I made that it's luck, but it, you know, combination of UCLA not shooting well in an away gym and Marquette defense holding tightening down on the three-point line, You could get that effective field goal percentage under 50%.
It's a lofty goal, but so is beating UCLA.
Correct.
So, basically the number is 50% for both games, but for the first game it's Marquette's offense, and for the second game it's UCLA's offense.
I like it. There's some symmetry there.
There's easy numbers to remember. So, anything else before we get out of here, Phil? Gosh, we've been talking almost an hour now.
Yeah, no, I think it's time to go win a game here in December, please.
Yeah, be very nice to get one. Hey, hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post a podcast there. You can leave comments on the .com. You can also rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Phil, have a good week. Doing all right on Christmas shopping, all that stuff?
I'm way behind, but I've got time. There's lots of stuff on the shelves, right?
Yeah. Supply chain's not great, man. Might want to do that ordering this week.
I'll get around to it. I've got some time.
Okay, well, good luck to you, and good luck to all of you, and good luck to your Marquette Golden Eagles this week. Hopefully they prove us wrong in a good way. Till next time, seashells and balloons, everyone.